Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:15 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 17th. Well, Qualcomm was up another $8 in here today, so this has taken the rally right up to test the highs back in 2014. The result of the, or the reason that the market has rallied so strongly is because the hardball legal are acrimonious, I think, environment and the legal fight that's been going on between Apple and Qualcomm over the course of the last few years ended yesterday with Apple conceding that they are not going to be able to make a 5G phone without using Qualcomm's intellectual property. So they have a couple of alternatives. They are either going to have to persist, and they're not going to like that because Qualcomm charges based on the total value of the end product in which their products are used. And obviously for iPhones, that's rather expensive. So Apple is probably going to want to either manufacture its own, come up with its own intellectual property with regard to 5G modems. Intel, whom Apple had been relying on, is just about to exit the market. Probably because Apple is has decided to settle with Qualcomm. But of course, the other producer of 5G modems is Huawei, and well, Huawei is persona non grata these days with U.S. Technology firms. So that's potentially really quite good news for Qualcomm over the short to medium term. And when we look at it over the long term, well, the share has been struggling really to get to gain traction, but as of today, it is right in the region of the peak from back in 1999. The last time it tested this level was in 2014. This suggests now is that there's potential for the share to start to perform more in line with some of the other semiconductor shares. And the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was in additional new high territory in here today, but it is looking rather overextended in the short term. And the NASDAQ 100 was able to push on to a new all-time high in here today. Now, it didn't close at that high, and there is, again, here also a short-term overbought condition. So I think there is scope for additional upside, but perhaps we could see some pause and consolidation occurring in the not so distant future. When we look at the S&P 500, it was in negative territory in here today. Again, this is another index right in the region of its peak. There has been a distinct absence of volatility over the course of the last few months, really. And that has contributed to the VIX index contracting, but it is now right in the region of the lows that we saw back in September and October, and it was off its lows in here today. Now, there is, I think, ample scope here for a return to at least a somewhat more volatile environment. It's, I think, rather unlikely that we're going to see the VIX trade back below 10. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to go back to 30, but it does suggest that we're going to be in for a somewhat more volatile environment, particularly when we've had such low volatility heading into an important area of potential resistance represented by the previous peaks. Now, when we look around the world, well, all eyes remain on China, and the A-share index was in positive territory again in here today. When we think about the banking sector, well, they've been very clearly ordered to get out there and start lending once more to the private sector, and the fact that it is back above the 15,000 level, that it has really been exhibiting clear relative strength, is a clear indication that it's an organ of the government. And when we think about the major banks, they are under orders now to really get out there and start lending. There is a clear fiscal stimulus going on in China that is supporting the export markets of a significant number of European countries as well as globally. So that's obviously a rather beneficial outcome. Part of the reason why that is now underway in China is because they have ended their policy of trying to contain the shadow banking sector and have declared success. They're trying to arrest the decline of the domestic economy. They need to have a better feeling economy heading into some very key anniversaries this year, one being the 100th anniversary of the beginning of the founding of the Communist Party. Then you've got the 70th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. And the Communist Party is going to be very alert to the fact that the economy and the stock market have been underperforming for the last few years. They're going to want to see a better performance heading into these major anniversaries in both July and October, so they're stimulating now. And of course, there is then the additional reason that they're stimulating because they need to, exhibit an ability to grow despite the tariffs that have already been imposed. That there is also a clear motivation to appear strong in the face of negotiations with the USA on this on the trade front. Well, the market has been clearly pricing in a I suppose a positive resolution to the trade war. We're going to have to see a positive resolution, or that is likely to be a catalyst for some profit taking generally. In Indonesia, then the Widodo has won the election, so the market was in positive territory. This is likely to be a catalyst for additional upside. It represents continuity and also a reform agenda, and the fact that both candidates were running on a pro-growth strategy is certainly a positive for the country generally. When we consider the rupiah, it's been strengthening for much of the last 6 months, but it was in weaker territory in here today. But it is below the trend mean, or at least the dollar is now below its trend mean, and what that suggests is that there is potential here for additional strength. Then we have the fact that India is also in the midst of its electoral process, which is likely to last another 6 weeks at least, and we're not going to have a result there until the end of May. But the Nifty is already pricing in a positive outcome for the BJP and Narendra Modi, and it's at a new all-time high. Well, when we start to think about markets that are at new highs, then it's a very short list. There's the Indian market, and there's the Nasdaq. There are semiconductors, and that's really about it. When we think about the European markets, well, the Euro stocks is trending higher, but and certainly it is pulling away from the trend mean right now, and it has unwound all of the decline in the fourth quarter of last year. Well, it's still a long way from an all-time high. And when we look at the longer term chart, I do think that there's a strong likelihood that we're going to see it push back up towards the upper side of that range. The big question, though, is when is it going to be able to sustain a move above 450? Then when we look at the Europe stocks index, well, it's been ranging below the 400 level since the early 2000s. So this is a not far off a 20-year range. And we'd have to conclude that when it eventually does break on the upside, then that is likely to be a rather profound change to the environment in Europe. Well, certainly the Chinese stimulus is a positive. The fact that the ECB is nowhere near raising rates is also positive. That's certainly helping Germany, and the DAX index is continuing to hold this move above the 12,000 level. When we look at the periphery of Europe, well, There are certainly, I think, green shoots, I think, would probably be the best way to think about it. There is remarkably negative perceptions about the outlook for Europe. One thing we do know, though, is that the ECB is going to continue supporting those bond markets. They're going to continue to hold the yields very low and facilitate low borrowing costs for member states, provided they meet their fiscal austerity guidelines. And that's a very difficult process, and it has certainly been one of the contributing factors in the rise of populism. But one thing we've seen in Europe is that they have successfully neutered a number of these populist upstarts. The prospect of higher yields on their debt is not something that any of these populist administrations have been willing to embrace. Well, what that suggests is that despite the sentiment to the opposite, I think it's quite likely that Europe is going to hold together, that the long-term ambition of bureaucrats in Brussels is a federal state, and that the big hurdle for that is going to appear sometime in the late 2020s, when, following the end of austerity, then they will have reached their goal of levelizing debt to GDP ratios. Well, when we look at Greece, for example, then the price is breaking up and away from its range, and it has bounced successfully from the lower side of this very long process of support building. I think it's also worth highlighting that a number of people from Greece I've spoken to recently have commented on just how cheap property is. When you look at Spain, there are whole hamlets for sale at bargain basement prices if one is willing to do the upkeep on whole villages. And what that really is a clear indication of is that not only have you got this austerity program underway, but that you are now starting to see bargain basement or fire sales starting to occur, and that it will eventually help to clear some of those bad debts, that sea of bad debts that is sitting on top of the European banking sector. It has very clear Japanese characteristics. It's going to take a long time to unwind that kind of problem. But even still, the banking sector now is back above the trend mean, and it has bounced from the lower side of this evolving 7-year range, and it has broken the downtrend from the beginning of 2018. So this does look like a medium-term recovery candidate here. That suggests that there is a clear reason to start to look at not only the highly successful European exporters, but also the pure domestic plays. We're starting to see that Greece is recovering, that Spain is also in the midst of a recovery, the Portuguese market is also recovering. And I need to put in the numbers if I'm going to be able to bring up the index. Now, the Portuguese index was in negative territory here today, but it is still on a recovery trajectory overall. There has been a great deal of volatility. One thing, of course, that is worth highlighting for all of these indices is that their complexion today is really quite different from what they looked like before the crash. There have been a lot of companies have gone bust. There have been a lot of nationalizations in the banking sector, and that means that the companies that have survived have done so for a reason. Well, when then we look at the commodity complex, well, the fact that China is stimulating is really quite positive for the industrial resources. Now, copper in here today was up to test the $3 area and could potentially have broken out, but wasn't quite able to hold that move all the way through the close. This whole range over the last 6 or 7 weeks continues to look like a process of consolidation, and I think this is still a recovery candidate. Now, nickel prices have also been ranging over the course of the last couple of months, and it's been really quiet over the course of the last 2 weeks. This also looks like a consolidation in the region of the trend mean prior to an additional recovery. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the soft commodities, well, we have been seeing over the last few weeks that there's been a great deal of weakness in certain parts of the soft commodity sector. Orange juice is now back testing the dollar level. Hasn't seen this region since 2015, and there is a short-term oversold condition. The Arabica coffee price is also below that psychological dollar level, and it was down in a dynamic manner in here today. So this is now extending the downtrend. And yes, there's certainly a short-term oversold condition, but it's going to have to post a very clear upward dynamic in order to check momentum on the downside in here. Then lean hogs had the has had the benefit of the swine flu, and then also the seasonality that the slaughter schedule doesn't really start until the contract changes in June. And what that suggests then is that we're going to have a supply deficit in the near term. That has helped to support prices against a background where demand has been, or excuse me, that supply has been constrained as a result of all the fatalities from swine flu. Well, what that suggests is that despite the fact that the industrial resources have been quite steady, and also that the oil price has been quite firm, that the continuous commodity index hasn't really been going anywhere because of some of the weakness in the soft commodities. Then, of course, we have gold, which came right back down to test the $1,275 area over the last five consecutive sessions. This is the lower side of the range. It is exactly in the region of the trend mean, but it is going to have to bounce and bounce in a dynamic manner in order to really confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. There is a clear potential for additional downside if it fails to bounce soon. So I think that is a clear potential that we need to be aware of. Then, when we look at the Brent crude price, it was down 12 cents in here today. Again, this is very quiet trading for one of the most volatile commodities anywhere. So we know that these kinds of periods of inactivity do not persist indefinitely. When it eventually breaks out, it will do so in a reasonably dynamic manner. If this is still a consistent trend, then it has got another maybe 3 or 4 weeks of ranging ahead of it before it can then push on by another $5 increment. And that's assuming that the trend remains consistent. I do think that the most likely scenario is we are going to get a push back up towards the $80 area over the course of the next few months, and that's generally where we can anticipate some additional supply coming back into the market. Now, with the stock markets either closing at new highs or in the region of new highs, I think it's interesting that the government bond yield has unwound more than half of its overextension relative to the trend mean, and it's right in the region of the 2.6% area, which is the lower side of that overhead trading range. It's been up in a reasonably dynamic manner over the course of April, but this is the first area of potential support for prices and resistance for the yield, and we're going to have to see it push above it in order to completely unwind the overextension relative to the trend mean. I personally think the most important thing that's happened with bond yields over the course of the last couple of years has been the failed move above 3%. And that holds out the real prospect that we're going to see tighter yields, that despite the fact that the market is at a new high, even modest weakness is likely to represent a bullish characteristic for bonds. I haven't really thought about bonds as being a clear buy for a long time, but the fact that the Treasury future has sustained this move above the trend mean in such a dynamic manner, that it is coming down more slowly than it went up, and that there are a number of areas of potential support. Well, what that suggests to me is that there is going to have to be very clear inconsistency to question that this isn't still an uptrend. And if we are to get much tighter yields, then that is likely to be beneficial for the stock market. It could be one of the causal factors behind yield chasing by investors, but that's certainly been evident in the high yield sector. And I think when we think about the fact that high yield spreads are now back to 350 basis points, they've failed to sustain the move above 400 basis points. This is a really quite considerable trend inconsistency, and it suggests that we're going to see some additional compression in those high yield spreads. That doesn't mean they can't widen again later, but there isn't any real evidence that they're about to do so. So I think that when we think about the stock market doing well, then that generally also corresponds with high yield bonds doing well, since they generally tend to trade like equities. The high yield bond ETF has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and again, this is another instrument that is short-term overbought. So I think even though there is the prospect here that we are going to get another leg on the upside, and that would be consistent with the prognostications about the yield curve, that you usually get a really quite strong performance. And also you start to see the outperformance of cyclical sectors like semiconductors or commodities. So that's, we're potentially seeing the beginning of that now. And then when we think further out, well, that's generally after you get that additional rally. It's when you need to become more cautious rather than less so. That is that's usually the template that we see, that people tend to panic when the yield curve first becomes inverted, and then they forget about it. Well, the 10-year and the 2-year spread has not inverted yet, and what that suggests is that there is still potential for additional upside in this market, even if we have short-term overbought conditions and the likelihood of some consolidation in the near future. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.